to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program. We are here live tonight, of course, at AM 1380 WLRM Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, going out across the internet, across the world, around the world at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. Also, of course, being broadcast at the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, scattered about different markets here in the good old U.S. of A. Bill Rowland, co-hosting with me this evening. And Bill, we just got off the line, of course, with our guest of this evening, Nick Griffin. And to say he is our featured guest of the night would be an understatement. One of our featured guests of the year, anytime he appears. And for a man of his stature to stay up till 1 a.m. Just to come on our show obviously conveys the level of respect he has for our work and for the audience that tunes into this program. And we certainly reciprocate that towards him, and indeed an honor. I think I've said it two or three times tonight, but this is what the Political Cesspool does every Saturday night, ladies and gentlemen. We bring you guests like Nick Griffin. We advance the ideas that Nick Griffin advances, and we do it better than anybody else. Bill?
The truth is, James, that the press in Britain is no more accurate or unbiased than the press in the United States. Both the press in Britain, the media in Britain, television, radio, virtually all forms of mass communication are controlled by the left, just as the same industries are controlled in the United States by the left. And so, naturally, Nick Griffin and any politician of his stripe will be vilified, will be made to look evil, dangerous, radical, extremist, all the big terms the left, you know, uses against our beliefs, against our people, will apply to him. Which makes you wonder and makes you think about the international scope of the left-wing media. Who controls it? And, you know, how they have picked their enemies out, not only in this country, but virtually all over the world. Really, I think that the press is certainly more free, unbiased, and diverse in the former Soviet Union than it ever could be here. In Russia, you actually do get a very wide range of opinions expressed in the mass media. You certainly don't get that in the United States, and apparently you don't get it in Britain either. So, Nick Griffin has to come on a show like this to get his viewpoint, to get the British National Party platform out to people in Britain. You know, we're Radio Free Europe now, in the sense that we're delivering the news that they can't hear in their own country.
Bill, I could actually hear the members of the BBC and the staff of the Daily Mail and the London Times, I could actually hear them having heart attacks as they listened to Nick Griffin being allowed to present his ideas without interruption. I mean, it's not supposed to go that way. I mean, what are these guys doing over here in the political cesspool, allowing a guy like Nick Griffin to speak? You know, and but this is what we do. And we do it because we support that which Nick Griffin advances, and we advance it here in America, too. And I'm quite famous for it. The Political Cesspool certainly has a reputation. We're very fortunate to have the respect of a vast audience that shares with us their questions and concerns. And to that end, Bill, I received the following email that I'm about to read to you from a loyal listener in South Carolina. And she raises an important point, an issue that many parents in our listening audience are sure to face if they send their kids to public or private schools in this day and age. So rather than answer her via email, I told her to tune in tonight, because we're going to answer her live on air for everyone to hear. And this is what she wrote, Bill, and being a father of two yourself, I know you can relate. She writes, James, I know you're extremely busy, but I was wondering if you could give me some advice and how to approach my local school board about how they're teaching Reconstruction. My daughter is in fifth grade. She had to read the book 40 Acres and a Mule. What an anti-white, hate-filled book. Not only that, the way they teach Reconstruction is so maddening. I spent the last week printing and reading slave narratives, firsthand accounts on Reconstruction from those who lived it in the South, and other historical data. I'm preparing a presentation with documentation for the local school board, principals, and fifth grade teachers. My presentation will be accurate, not anti-black, but it will show that Northern extremists and not white Southerners caused both of the problems during that time. How dare they teach Southern children to be ashamed of their heritage? It makes my blood boil. I plan on sending this ahead of time to the local media. Obviously, I'm nervous. Any tips you can give me? Thanks. So, Bill, she brings up stuff that obviously anybody with kids can deal with, can relate to. How many people listening to the show tonight have faced a similar scenario? What should you do when your children are forced to recite lies and disrespect their ancestors just to get a passing grade in school? Bill, rolling that question to you.
The first thing to remember is that the public school system, the government schools in this country, are enemy territory for white people, white students, and white children. These institutions have consistently moved to the left, and in fact towards outright communism, for generations. The public school system in the United States was never a conservative body. The school teachers trained in the 1930s were trained in communist-run teachers' academies. The education systems in most colleges, the ones that offer education degrees, are absolutely ripe with left-wing views and communist views. And so your daughter or your son already enter a system that's hostile to their very existence. And they need to know that. Your kids need to know that they're in a system that is against them from the start. It's a good place for them to begin learning about the country they live in, is how they are treated as students in schools that your taxes pay for. You're on the right track, though, when it comes to doing your own research, getting material together that is accurate as far as the Reconstruction era goes. It was certainly very hostile to the South. We were under military occupation. We were forced to accept the changes and the doctrines and the policies of the Reconstruction governments. We didn't vote them in. And as soon as the South was able to get rid of those policies, the South voted them out. So that's something that your children need to know, is that these policies, the Reconstruction policies, were forced on white Southerners at the point of a bayonet and at the risk of their very lives did anyone stand up to the Reconstruction government. The next thing, as you said, you printed out all this material, is put it in a comprehensive form. And as I would, if approaching the school board or wherever you intend to take this, make it clear that this is a one-sided historical perspective that does not coincide or is not reflected in other historical accounts from the same era. And remind them that it was the United States government that rejected Reconstruction. It wasn't the state. The United States government stopped Reconstruction as a failure. So it was a failed policy. And you need to bring that up again in front of the school board. That, you know, the impression is that the South had all this power to shrug off Reconstruction, when in fact the South had no power to do so. We were forced by federal troops to accept Reconstruction. The federal government itself rejected Reconstruction as a failure.
Hey, Bill, hold on right there. We've got to take a break. We're going to pick it up where we're leaving off when we come back. What do you do when your kids are forced to recite lies in order to pass their classes at school? We'll be back.
When the truth is found, welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, on the heels of our scorching interview with Nick Griffin, our live interview tonight with Nick Griffin, staying up very late to be on the political cesspool, he was. We're now talking about an equally important issue. We've all been there. You got kids in school. they get taught a lot of things that run afoul with that which is true in terms of history, that which is wholesome, so on and so forth. But there are a lot of good people out there, a lot of good, hardworking people that don't have an option. They have to send their kids to either public or private schools with the way everything's set up now, the welfare state being in the shape that it is. Both parents and the dog have to work, and so we can pay for welfare for the minorities here. Homeschooling isn't an option for everyone. Bill, so the question back to you is this. You know, the listener from South Carolina writes us, and she's very upset about how they are teaching history in her daughter's fifth grade class. So she's got to go up there and confront the school board and the administration of the school. But, you know, my question to you is this. Do you tell your kids to go to class and recite the lies they need to recite in order to get a passing grade, or do you tell them to be defiant and risk getting poor grades and risk them being a social outcast or a problem child? Do you go up as a parent and confront the administration, you know, putting the mark on your son or daughter's head? How do you handle it? It's a very sensitive issue. Do you try to reinforce what's right at home and tell them to go and play the game at school, or do you fight it everywhere you can? It's a question. I don't know if there's one true answer to that.
James, every person, every parent with a white child, or I should say every all white parents, must monitor their children's education, especially the coursework in history and social study, because those two subjects are particularly infested with the politically correct anti-white curriculum. And so you have to monitor these things. And what you tell your children is that you have reviewed the subject that they're studying, that they are being forced to study that subject in a certain way, that it is not true, that it is false, but that to pass a grade, they simply have to repeat back what they know, even if it's a lie. But let them know straight out it's a lie, and then give them the alternative. Show them and teach them the truth. Don't stand up and say, this is a lie, but you've got to pass it, without reinforcing the education with the truth, the real material, with factual material. And virtually all of these courses are designed around propaganda. And you will notice that when you do look at the study material, they have these little anecdotal chapters, like letters from slaves and accounts of slavery and all of these things that have nothing to do with history or documented history or history that's been done with research and with footnotes and with all sorts of references. It's strictly anecdotal. And that's one thing you can bring up in front of the school board. This is just an anecdotal account of Reconstruction. What we need are some real textbooks, some real histories on it, and I brought a list of real histories of the Reconstruction. You don't have to print out material. Just take the books that you took the material out of and take it and say, these are some books that were actually done by scholars on Reconstruction, and I think these books should be added to the reading list when this subject comes up.
Does it do you more harm than good to go before the school board, to go before the principals and various administrations, well, and make this point?
The principals and the teachers are a waste of time. You have to go before the school board because they're elected officials. And I would even send out a press release or contact the press about covering that particular meeting.
And I think that's what she was asking. Not to interrupt, but that's what, one of the things this listener of our program was asking, you know, sending out notice to the local media about her presentation before the school board, that's something you would encourage her to do.
Yes, I would, but make sure that you've got your facts correct, indicate why you're against the curriculum as it's been presented, that it's simply biased, it's one-sided, and it's not scholarly. And you can be sure that those classes are being taught from a very flimsy standpoint as far as scholarship goes. Take books and offer as references books that are scholarly, that were thoroughly researched, books from both the North and the South regarding Reconstruction, that were written contemporary to the event, which means the first-hand accounts, or at least where the material was taken from first-hand accounts and not from some theory that was dreamed up by Eric Foner or one of these other revisionist historians who basically hate white people and who are coming from extremely left-wing perspective. So, you know, there are alternatives. Simply tell the school board that you want these alternatives and these other histories brought before the class, and that some chapters should be taken from them as part of their education as well, that history is never one-sided. There's always two sides to history, and you believe that both sides should be presented. And that is not an unreasonable request from any person. And if they said, well, what about teaching, for instance, the Nazi side of history? Or, you know, what about if we taught all about what the history is of from wars where we know we were right? And then you simply say, you know, you're right based upon the facts, not upon what you hear someone that has an agenda. And that's what we're talking about, is taking the agenda out of the classroom. You might even want to use that statement with the press. I'm just trying to take the agenda out of the classroom and make it a real educational experience.
And you're right, Bill. Let's go. Actually, Bill, I'm just been informed by my producer that the lady, the fine lady who wrote this letter to us, is actually on the line now. So let's take her call. Leah, you are on the line.
Thanks.
I think you've got your radio on in the background. I can hear the feedback there.
Oh.
So turn down the radio and let Bill and I know what's on your mind as we address the issue you brought up earlier
this
week.
I wanted to say the lady who wrote the book, Harriet Gillum Robinette, 40 Acres and Maybe a Mill, she won a award for this book. It's put out by Scholastic, Inc. They are put out in all the schools everywhere, nationwide, not just the South. And at the end of the book, there's a bibliography. It's got a list of what she considers her historical documentation, even though this is a fiction book. It's based, in her mind, on facts, and there's a list of bibliography. And, for instance, she used My Folks Don't Want to Talk to Me About Slavery. She used a book called To Be a Slave. She used a book called What Happened When. I photocopied a bunch of the book. And then at the end, she has this author's note, and she tells all these then really untruths about what happened during Reconstruction so that the kids could know, quote-unquote, the truth after she tells this little story about this little 12-year-old poor boy and the horrendous things that happened to him during Reconstruction. So this is, technically, they consider this to be a wonderful book because she won this great award from Scholastic, Inc.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Bill. Address the point she makes as we're getting short on time. I mean, obviously, it's an award-winning book, you know, because it was written, you know, by incompetent. But
James, awards don't mean anything. We see them coming out of Hollywood all the time. They're meaningless in a situation like that. And she could have, you know, who knows, she may have paid for an award like that. The question is this a history class where this book is being used?
We got 30 seconds to break, Leah.
Well, it's a fifth grade class, so it's technically social studies in fifth grade. But yeah, history, social studies.
And all you have to do is tell the school board that a work of fiction is being used to teach history, and that's wrong. That's your simple answer. It's a work of fiction, and our bibliography is a work of fiction.
That's a good point.
Well, we got 18 seconds to break, Bill. I don't know. Leah, actually, stay on the line. We're gonna talk during the break and see if we can explore this a bit further. We've got another guest waiting in the wings, but we'll get it all sorted out. This is a very important topic, and we're trying to hit it as best we can. Keith Alexander and I will revisit this issue next week on the show. But stay tuned, everybody. We don't know what's going to happen when we come back. This is live radio. We never know.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, welcome back, everybody. In the midst of a very important topic brought to us by one of our listeners in South Carolina, don't have much more time to explore it tonight. But, Leah, let me ask you this. When are you going before the school board?
Well, when I have my research all ready, I don't have a set date. I can go when I want to.
All right, well, let me ask you this. I'd like to invite you back. I didn't know if this was time-sensitive or how time-sensitive it was. Keith Alexander and I are going to be exploring this in greater detail next week. In fact, Keith Alexander was the co-host of mine who was assigned to kind of look into this issue and get you a great answer. We had to move Keith around tonight because of Nick Griffin's interview. Keith's going to be back with me for the first hour next week. So would you mind calling in next week, midway through the first hour, and we're gonna open this up again and explore it in greater detail?
I'd be glad to. Thank you.
Leah, thank you for your support of the program. Thanks for calling in tonight, and we'll talk to you again next week as we continue to explore this vitally important topic. What should conservative parents do when sending their kids to school, where obviously they're going to be inundated with material that is not going to benefit them in any way? Very important question. We're going to continue our coverage of it next week. Thank you, Leah.
Thank you very much.
Bill, you've got a guest on the line now, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to introduce him.
Thank you, James. My next guest, I was informed about him from a member of the Council of Conservative Citizens and was informed that he had some very important information regarding genetically modified foods, chemicals that have been banned in 179 countries but are being brought back by the United Nations, and a very, very alarming bill that's in the Senate right now called S-510, which essentially will give the United States government the power to decide who can grow food, what conditions will be allowed for selling even fresh foods, and this may even prevent some people from having a garden in their own backyard. I have on the line Mr. Michael Cusciutti, who is the host of Communities for Unity, and they do have a website, www.communitiesforunity.com. Welcome to the show, Mr. Cusciutti, and what's going on with this Senate Bill 510, which I think I've got this right in front of me. It's called the FDA Food Safety Modernization Act. What is the story behind that bill?
All right, first off, I have it as SB 510. This bill, if passed, will give the government total and absolutely control over what Americans can and cannot eat. The bill empowers the government to indiscriminately close down small family farms and even legislate laws that can arrest the public if they even plant a home garden to grow organic foods. I know of two farms that were raided and closed just a couple of weeks ago. In fact, as recently as last week, I heard a man was interviewed on Fox television where he was caught and fined for raising vegetables in his backyard and giving them to neighbors. It certainly will affect what we eat and what we can eat.
Well, I noticed this bill, because I did go and check the bill out, and you can find it online. So it is not, this is no rumor, this is a fact, that it has broad bilateral support and it crosses party lines as far as the support it's got. The key sponsor is Richard Durbin of Illinois, but then there are as divided a group of senators as Senator Edward Kennedy, who I guess sponsored the bill before he died, and David Vitter of Louisiana. I mean, they are completely opposite as far as politics go, but for some reason, they're in agreement on this bill. And may I also say that this comes out of the Committee of Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, and also, to no one's surprise, the House of Homeland Security. So, obviously, Homeland Security's got their finger in this as well. But there are some very disturbing, very alarming things in this bill. I guess you've read the bill, and Cusciutti, and you know what's in it.
I have, and I agree with you 100%. I think the fact that this bill is—it's not a new bill. They tried to pass this bill last year. But the fact that that's not a new bill and they're still trying to pass it, along with the fact that Codex Alimentarius Commission, the World Trade Commission, and the 2 million Americans that have already died in the United States from a suspicious respiratory ailment renders concern.
Here's Section 109 of this bill. Now, this should sound an alarm to anyone who has a garden, anyone who is growing food. Section 109 directs the Secretary of Homeland Security to report annually on the activities of the Food and Agriculture Government Coordinating Council and the Food and Agriculture Sector Coordinating Council. What's the Homeland Security involved with this for?
Yes. Are you asking if Homeland Security is involved?
No, they are involved in this bill.
Yes, it will come under their control.
And as I understand, that this is all a front to move forward genetically modified food.
I think it's more a question of whether the government is dictating exactly what we can and cannot eat. Firstly, I mean, from my perspective, it implies that we're just literally being poisoned.
Well, in conjunction with this very, very disturbing and alarming bill that's before the Senate right now, and as I say, it has a broad bipartisan support, which is always makes you wonder who's behind such things. Before the show, we actually discussed also the influence of Codex, which is a, let's say it's funded by the United Nations World Health Organization and some of their schemes and plans. Mr. Khashoggi, let's talk about that for a minute.
Codex has enacted 7 of the 12 deadliest plans of pesticides known to mankind. Pesticides that 176 nations in 2001 banned as too dangerous for human consumption. They've reactivated 7 of the 12 deadliest chemicals worldwide. Now, even if farmers in the United States are not using these chemicals, countries that use these chemicals to produce food and export the food to the United States cannot be refused at the borders, because to do so would violate the NAFTA and CAFTA free trade agreement. So in that sense, we're literally forced to consume poisonous food.
So we can't use these chemicals in this country, but the food that's imported may already be contaminated with deadly chemicals, which are outlawed in the United States.
No, they're authorized to be used all over the world. They can be used in this country.
So these chemicals can be used here, but are they being used? Are they actually using these deadly chemicals in our...
That I don't know. I'd say the point is moot, because regardless of whether we use them in the United States or not, the countries that do use them, their products cannot be refused at our borders.
Well, that's very disturbing, considering that if you don't know what you're eating, then you could be poisoning yourself if these chemicals are, in fact, present. But on the other hand, the United States government, for the sake of health and for the sake of the protection of our foods, is shutting down little family farms and even apparently seizing fruits and vegetables from home gardens.
Exactly, and these are major concerns. But even more alarming is the fact that Russia recently indicated that 2 million Americans in this country since 2008 have died of a mysterious respiratory ailment, and attributed that those deaths to the genetically altered foods that are being produced in this country. Now, 80% of the corn and 93% of the soybean that's in this country is genetically altered, all produced by Monsanto. And I think it's fair to say, as you do the research, that you find that Monsanto is the company that will produce the food to the entire country. It controls the food that's consumed in the United States.
Well, now, here's another interesting thing. From the United Nations World Health Organization declared, and now this I don't understand, declared all nutrients to be toxins. That sounds like a contradiction in terms. How can a nutrient be a toxin?
Well, that's the exact point that Dr. Rima Lebeau makes. It's a World Trade Commission, not a health organization, not a consumer's organization.
All right, gentlemen, got to push pause on the broadcast for just a moment. Got to take a commercial break. We'll be back with Bill Rowland and our guest right after these words. Stay tuned. The Political Cesspool, still more to come.
We'll be back right after these messages. Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, before we get back to brass tacks here in this segment, I want to tell you that coming up in the third hour of tonight's program, we are going to be doing a little rapid fire segment. I have got, believe me, my plate is overflowing here. I've got a lot to bring to your attention tonight during the third hour, which is coming up in about 15 minutes from now. Of course, last week I was at the big Frankie Valli concert, and Bill Rowland was here covering for me. Bill covered the show last week while I was absent. Tonight, of course, during the first hour, Nick Griffin. We've had a very hard-hitting second hour. But during the third hour, we're going to finally catch our breath and go through some rapid fire. We're going to cover a lot of news the third hour. So stay tuned for that. But before we get there, I'd like to remind you of an announcement we posted on our website just a day or two ago. Political Cesspool videos are coming soon. Our award-winning program has become a nationally syndicated powerhouse that routinely makes headlines throughout America and around the world. Our internet headquarters is anchored by a blog that welcomes thousands of readers each week, further complementing the work that we do here on the radio program. Written a book this summer that's enjoying brisk sales and critical acclaim. So what's next? Well, as I just mentioned, as the Political Cesspool radio program continues to grow and expand, we're proud to announce that TPC videos will be coming to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, beginning in October. And we've got a lot of good ideas that we're going to be unveiling as we advance this project. Or we're going to be giving you quick video updates on our blog about some of the biggest stories that we're covering here on the show. I'm going to give you tours of Memphis to better illustrate that which we speak of here on the program. I'm going to show you what life is like inside our studio right here during our live broadcasts. It's all coming in October to thepoliticalcesspool.org. I'll talk to you more about it during the third hour. But first, still business at hand this hour, Bill Rowland and our esteemed guest of this hour. Back to y'all.
In case you're just tuning in, we have Michael Cacciuti on the line, and we're discussing the very, very alarming, very disturbing developments where food production and genetically modified foods are concerned. And, Michael, I was just looking again at this bill, 510, S-510. You say it's SP-510, but it's showing up as S-510 in the Senate record here. But, for instance, this one line, it should be enough to tell you what's in store. This is in Section 103, Part 4, prohibits the operation of a facility that manufactures, processes, packs, or holds foods for sale in the United States if the owner, operator, or agent in charge of such a facility is not in compliance with this section. Delays in implementation of this section for small businesses. Now, it delays implementation of this section for small businesses, which means, couldn't that mean a farmer's market? Couldn't that mean a fruit stand? Couldn't it mean so many things that that these businesses would go out of sale, go out of business? And isn't it also true that these are the places where you probably would not buy genetically modified foods?
To my mind, it affects every farm, every grower of food in the country, with exception of the corporate farms. As I said, I interpret it to mean that Monsanto is going to be the producer of food for this country.
Well, certainly Monsanto has been a leader in developing hybrid seeds, genetically modified foods, as you say, and I know that from one of the videos I watched, one discussion is also that all foods will have to be irradiated to supposedly kill contamination or bacteria, and that every single fish, head of beef, every pork product, as the doctor you mentioned said, everything with feet, fins, or feathers will have to be inoculated for diseases through this government act. Is that also what you see coming?
That is the order of Codex.
Ah, so that's also coming through the UN. That's a UN thing.
That's the entire world. Codex is a World Trade Commission. It will set the standard for the entire world, including the United States.
Well, let's get back to the Russian study. You said, and I had to kind of clear my ears, you said that the Russian study indicates that 2 million Americans since 2008 have died because of genetic modified food from a respiratory illness?
This is correct. This is correct.
Well, it would seem
to me... And now, I've personally researched that and found that there's no challenge to 2 million Americans dying. The challenge is from Monsanto that it was not attributed to their product. Yet, if you research the charge by Russia, you'll find that 3 laboratories in Germany, France, including the Greenpeace laboratories, have all verified that there is evidence to show that it was attributed to genetically altered foods.
That's very scary, because that means that something you eat could literally kill you. And 2 million people is no small number. That's 1 million a year since 2008. 1 million people a year have died due to this respiratory illness.
And still dying.
And still dying. What are the symptoms of this respiratory condition?
Say it again.
I said, what are the symptoms, or what does this illness, how does it develop, and what are the symptoms of it?
It's classified as a mysterious respiratory ailment. No determination has been made as yet firmly of what they died of. What was the cause of those deaths?
It's similar, I would guess, to bronchitis or pneumonia or some illness like that that could come on as, I think there's a new one that's like emphysema, but it's not called emphysema. There's another name for it. And oddly, you should mention that, because there are now these treatments coming out for this type of illness. And I guess we could include perhaps even asthma as one of those illnesses.
Well, you're discussing something now that I don't know. I'm not versed on that, so I couldn't.
Well, I raise that as a question, because asthma has become an epidemic in this country just in the last 15 or 20 years. And so I think I'm simply saying perhaps that's part of the reason that asthma is on the rise, is because of these genetically modified foods.
Well, let me say this. That all of this information, all documented, is on the website communitiesforunity.com. Now, that's communities in plural. And if your viewership or your listeners were to go to the video archives, everything they could possibly want to know with what's going on in this country and around the world is there. And it begins with John F. Kennedy's speech before the Associated Press in 1963, where he exposed the secret society that was taking control of government and advising the press to be the buffer between government actions and the American people.
Well, that again, that's communities, plural, for unity, communitiesforunity.com. And we certainly hope that our listeners will visit that website to study some of this really frightening information that's out there about the foods we're eating and the attempts by your government to shut down independent growers, people who are not buying into the genetically modified food program and not buying these hybrid Frankenstein food seeds. So it's very a big problem. I understand, Denny, we've got a caller on the line for Mr. Cusciutti, Michael from Fort Lauderdale.
Yes.
Hello, Mike. Are you there, Michael?
Yes, I am.
This was another. I thought we had a caller for.
Sorry.
Do we still have that caller on the line?
Apparently not, Bill. I'm not getting anything
in
my headset.
What do people need to do, Mr. Cusciutti, to get involved to do something about this? This development.
Bill, actually, the caller is up now. We got him. We worked it out. He's here.
Okay.
Excuse me. Hello.
Yes, Michael from Fort Lauderdale.
Oh my God.
Well, I guess we're playing. We're
I heard
playing
a dog barking.
Tag.
I don't know if that counts.
We tried. Well, back to you, Mr. Cusciutti. We're just going to have to let Michael from Fort Lauderdale go. Back to you. What do people need to do to get involved? I know they need to go to your website and take a look at the information you have there about foods and genetically modified foods. What do they need to do right now?
What I call for is organization of the middle class throughout the country. Unite the middle class. Solidarity, I think, is the answer, the solution to the problem the country faces today. It can work for Poland. It can work for the United States. And then tell the middle class, get actively involved, come together, unite. United we stand, divided we fall. And stand up against the policies of government. Nothing is going to change in this country.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have just had a good interview, Bill Rowland and Michael Cusciutti. Check out his website, communitiesforunity.com. Get more information about him and his work. We got to take a break now. Coming up in the third hour, I'm going to be presenting to you a rapid fire segment during which I cover a lot, and I mean a lot, of materials and hot button political topics. So stay tuned for that. The third hour is still forthcoming. We'll be back in a flash.
Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They pull the ride.